Welcome back, everybody. Another episode of Orale Boyle Heights coming at y'all from the homies pad in Boyle Heights. This is another remote recording. So if it doesn't sound too as good as it normally sounds when I'm recording at Espacio, I apologize. I did spend a good chunk of time like dialing in the microphones and setting it up so everything sounds a lot better this time around. But this is episode 14, because I just did two with The Militant. I did one with Rafa, so it was 12, 13. Yeah, this is episode 14, Orale Boyle Heights. And I'm here with, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. This is Laura Navar, also known as Laura Torres. Yes. We're in transition, still getting used to it.
That was one of the first questions I had, is which ones do I use?
I was like, I don't know, both of them.
So I'm here at Laura's house. She's dope enough to open up her space to just interview and to take time from her day to do this. So I really appreciate that, Laura. I also believe that some of the work you do is really important. That's also why I want to have you on as a guest on my running list of folks that I want to have on here. So
thank you, Eric. I appreciate you. And of course, you know, I feel like there's a lot to share, and I'm happy to support you on your podcast as well.
Yeah, thank you for listening, because we were talking about that earlier. So basically, Laura and I just had a little friend date today. We went to go buy some stuff, we went to go eat, catch up, and now we're recording. So in between that, we were catching up on some chisme, but which we might get to later at some point or another, depending how the conversation goes. But more than anything, we can start with where you grew up.
I grew up mostly in Boyle Heights. Boyle Heights is always going to be home to me. But I also grew up in Georgia very briefly.
Oh, that's right, the South.
Echo Park for like a minute. And I was born in La Ciudad de Mexico. So a little bit of different places, but definitely Boyle Heights is home. I mean, I live in the apartment that I lived in when I was in middle school. So.
Yeah, you've been here a long time. And I, maybe because I'm just a bad friend and I forgot, but I didn't remember you telling me you were like born in Mexico City.
You're a bad friend.
It didn't say it on Facebook.
No, I don't know. I mean, I feel like that may be because my mom's from Oaxaca. So yeah. I'm always like, yeah, like Oaxacan for sure. Food, Oaxacan yeah. traditions. You know, she lived in Mexico, La Ciudad de Mexico, for like 24 years. In that time, I was born.
All right. So we have that in common. We're both born in Mexico City. Yeah. I think we were same age too, no? Almost. I'm 34.
I think I'm 34. Am I turning 34? I might be turning 34.
That's what happens in old age. But yeah, so that's awesome. I think most folks don't get that opportunity anymore to live in the same place that they grew up, just because of how things are shifting right now in terms of housing with affordability and everybody getting pushed out because of gentrification that's going on in the neighborhood. And for you, you've been lucky enough to stay here and, you know, have some dope ass parties. I think the thing most people remember the most about your place is that when Ciclovia comes through Boyle Heights, it's right in front of the route.
Yeah.
So that's usually like when we have some of the better parties.
Time for some snacks, time for some drinks. That's so funny. I thought you were gonna reference when I moved back into the apartment after my mom decided to retire. I had no furniture, right? Because, you know,
oh,
like,
yeah.
Who does? So I would just have like these indoor picnics and like
movies. We have movie nights. Wall. Yeah.
And I would be like, yo, I have like no tables, no couches. So bring your pillow and bring your blanket and just pretend it's a park.
It was fun because it was cold and yeah, we would all just bundle up together and you have like hot chocolate and pan dulce.
Yeah.
We would just watch like some bootleg movie or something on your projector because you had no TV, but you had a projector.
Yeah.
So how was it growing up? Like where did you end up going to school?
So, I mean, I feel like it was a lot. It was a lot growing up. Boyle Heights was different. I kind of remember the early 90s as a blur. But I grew up going to Second Street Elementary, Hollenbeck Middle School, and then Roosevelt. So tons of people, tons of different cultures. I feel like there's many phases of Laura, or many like faces I started off saying phases like PH, but I actually meant phases.
Seasons?
Like, you know, the Laura who was into sports, the Laura who did
you
well.
You were in track and field, yeah.
Yeah, the Laura who did well in class, you know, the Laura who was all about history, but also, like, the Laura who was like, sure, let's go to this party. Or, like, I was on my way to school, but then someone said pancakes, and I missed first and second period. So it's just, like, it's a mix. It's... like our city, a richness of stories, like a richness of perspectives, and so many different outlets for curiosity, habits, shaping, everything.
Yeah, we're, aside from eating pancakes, what were like some of those like memories that you're like, I remember that one time I did this. Like maybe because you got in trouble, or kid was this like such a memorable day with like the people you were hanging out with?
One thing, I was really into wrestling. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of weird. Growing up, I was like, yeah, wrestling. And then middle school, we would have like these wrestling matches at Hollenbeck Park, which was kind of crazy because that's also where you have like the fights, you know, whether it was like a rumble, whether it was like two people, like meet me after school at the park. Everyone's kind of going
Or you
home
go there,
there
to make out or take quinceañera pictures.
Or have an affair. I feel like I saw plenty of those. but also that's where we decided we would go wrestling. And I remember.
And you're talking about like the kind that's on TV. Like,
yeah, yeah.
The Rock and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Lex Luger.
Yeah.
The moonwalk, all of that. So I remember, like, we thought it was a fun idea. I'm not sure we thought of, like, oh, it's a good idea. I think we're just like, oh, why not? You know, fill in some time. Let's go do some wrestling. And, of course, we had no training. I ended up with, like, a bunch of bruises. My teacher was like, is everything okay at home? But then she looks around and, like, half of us have, like, these strange bruises all over because we're wrestling each other. I don't know. It was just... kind of that transition of being a kid and still playing and still literally horsing around to very quickly
like the
getting
world.
Into that space where, you know, I got tall. I was like 14, but I looked like 17. It just changed really quickly. So I think maybe that's part of why I like those memories, because it was like my last little phases of innocence and being a kid.
Yeah. Dang. Those are hard to come by because, I mean, I remember just because my parents were working class. So I've always been like around them in some capacity of where they work. But also like it, after like a specific year, whether you're a guy or a girl or like whichever way you want to identify and your parents bring you up, that, you know, it's that time of like, all right, you're not a kid anymore. And they'll say that like in some. Like for me, it was like some funny way where they're like, yeah, ya tienes pelo en el culo or something. Or like you got hair in your armpit or whatever. And they'd be like, you know, you're older now. Like you should be doing more serious things. So for you, was that, I mean, you realized that, but did you think your mom like also like started setting you in that too?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit forced. I don't think it was 100% her choice. In terms of that happening, that would have to be early high school. You know, my mom was undocumented. She was a single parent. She didn't drive. So there were a lot of obstacles to her literally keeping a roof over our head and food on our table. So she had to take a live-in job, which meant she left on Monday mornings and she came home Saturday mornings, sometimes Friday. And in between, thank God no one called child services. but there was a little while where it was just like, you're on your own, you know? You're responsible for cooking.
Like you're old enough to be independent.
Yeah, but I really wasn't. I was 14. So that was unplanned. Definitely not something that she really wanted to do, but... at the same point, what choice does she have?
Yeah, that tripped me out too, because you were an only child and I grew up with three younger sisters, so it's like I don't know what that's like to have like your own space.
Yeah, I had a lot of my own space. I think, you know, you border between being alone and being lonely. There were definitely some of those lonely moments.
Yeah, because yeah, your mom's away and you're like out here just back home doing homework, watching TV, wrestling, I'm assuming. So was, I mean, because, you know, when we've talked, you've talked about high school was where, I mean, at least from my perspective, when you've shared this, is that that's where you more or less te pusiste las pilas about, like, I gotta do good in school, you know, I gotta get good grades and, like, get into this program and then go into college. Like, was that because that's what you saw for yourself, or partly because of what your mom wanted for you, something else?
It definitely started with my mom and my family. Like, going to college was never a question. It didn't matter that we were poor or any other obstacles. I was also undocumented. But somehow that never really came into the question.
Like, that's why we're here.
It was like, you're going to go to college, you're going to get a diploma, you're going to live a better life. It was from a different perspective, definitely some buying into the American dream, which is so flawed, but it really did at least give me that confidence and operating from a place that I had no doubt that I would make it to college. So I am very thankful at least for that clarity that came from my entire family, not just my mom.
Nice. Yeah, that's a lot of support. You obviously felt that. That is a pressure too when you were in school too, no?
Yeah, I felt it as a pressure, but I think I always remember that my mom had to drop out of school when she was in elementary because she was a girl, and her and my aunts grew up hearing, like, why would you waste your money? Don't waste your time on sending your daughters to school, because for what? They're just going to get married. So I was so upset. Like, it still makes me upset to think about how that can be a lingering problem, but I was just like, you know, my mom is very smart. Some of my tías really like to read, and even though it was pressure, it was just like, damn, at least I have this huge opportunity that was never an option for them.
Yeah, I think a lot of us can relate to that, you know, you want better for your kids, so you're sacrificing so they have it, kind of aspect. I think I'm unappreciative of that, because I'm just like, school, psh, I'm done with school, I dropped out.
Well, I was a nerd, you know, like, I like reading. I'm in love with audiobooks right now. I feel like knowledge and learning, whether it's something that's all super academic or it's like, how do I make jam, or, you know, how do I make a candle, or,
yeah,
like, anything, I want to learn. Like, I've always had this hunger for knowing how to do more. And I think it's tied to wanting to be independent. So I was also a nerd. I joined history club. Come on. Who does that? Who does that? I was part of the decathlon before I quit. I guess I had to quit something. So I quit decathlon.
You're doing too many things at once.
Yeah.
Dang. No, I share that same appetite for knowledge, but I think I'm obviously more of a visual learner, so I'm always, like, you saw me right now, just sending up the microphones. I was like, let me YouTube this really quickly.
And I was like, let me read this article.
Yeah, well, you know, you're being very productive of your time. So for you, there's a program significant in your life that helped you transition between high school to college. Mm-hmm. What was the name of it?
It is the Posse program. We were, you know, the guinea pigs, the test trial. The program really started in New York back in the 80s. I mean, that's why it's called Posse, because there was this counselor who wanted to make sure that her students who were getting scholarships weren't coming home because they were homesick or unsupported. And after some conversations, you know, someone was like, if only I had my posse with me, I would have, like, stuck it out.
Urban slang for you.
Yeah. So that's where the name comes from. And they gave me the opportunity to meet some other amazing people from LA. Some of my best friends went to Belmont. Grew up in Highland Park. We all kind of had this experience to navigate going to Iowa for college.
What was the school you went to?
I went to Grinnell College. It's a small private liberal arts school. I met hipsters before I knew what hipsters were. I think I met them before they made it to California.
What was it that you're like? Well, obviously now you can say they're hipsters, but back then, what was, like, I guess some of the identifiers were like, that's not, like, what is, like, who is that? Like, what made them stand out for you?
I think we stood out.
Well, obviously.
You know, we were from LA.
These little brown kids.
Yeah, I was, like, wearing my sweatpants, my little Converse, like, not prepared for any of the weather, much less anything else that had to do with going to a small private liberal arts college in the middle of the country. But I think there were definite, like, norms or stereotypes. So if you lived on South Campus, you were on the hippie side. And that ranged from, like, that means they don't wear shoes, to they're wearing all hemp clothes, to, like, any other type of hippiness thing. Then you had North Campus, which you had your athletes, but really we were Division III, so, you know, that's also not like your typical college experience.
They're there for the fun, not for the competition.
Yeah, and I lived in Cleveland Hall, which was South Campus, which was like ground zero for like hippie culture.
Okay.
I liked it. I enjoyed it. And then maybe that's why no me peino. And then I lived in Spanish House, and then I moved off campus. So
was that where all the Spaniards live? Or
no, we didn't have that many Spaniards. Maybe two. We didn't have many Latinos. We didn't have
per
many
se.
Mexicans
yeah,
at all. Like I could probably count them on my finger, and that was
like your class.
Yeah, like we didn't have Mecha. We didn't have...
There wasn't enough of y'all.
No. So what we had was SOL, Student Organizations of Latinos and Latinas. And that was everyone. Like, all the Latinos that grew up in the U.S. and Latinos who came to our college from Guatemala or...
study abroad.
Or Panama.
So it's like all the Americas.
Yes. Which... very quickly reminded me that we come in so many shades, with so many experiences, with so many perspectives, from very different classes. So it was just like such a different experience than living in Boyle Heights.
I bet. So how was it that you got involved with the program? Like, I mean, I kind of like share it in the way where, like, if you were going to share with somebody that is interested in the Posse program, because maybe somebody will share this with somebody who's interested.
Sure. So you have to be nominated for the scholarship. You have to be nominated to apply. Hit me up.
Oh yeah, you've sent those emails when it's like, and I don't know, I think I've told you this, one of my coworkers was also a Posse member too.
What?
Yeah, like we talk about it all the time, because it's like I told them, what, no way, like my homie's a Posse member too. Obviously different classes, but
yeah, like maybe different schools.
Yeah he went to a different school, and like every year he's been sending like the, hey, like, you know, this is the program, if you want to nominate somebody. And I'm like, I don't know any teachers. So
yeah, I mean, this was over a decade ago. I graduated in 2003 from high school. So, yeah, reach out to me. Reach out to other people. Get nominated. You could also nominate if you're, like, a community leader, like a pastor. If you work at a community center, if you're a teacher, counselor, principal, you can also contact Posse and say, hey, these are some people that I want to nominate. It's a leadership-based scholarship. So that means there is no, like, standard minimum GPA, but there is an average, and they do look for well-rounded students.
More different than, like, college applications in a way?
Except that they really look at your extracurriculars and, like, are you a leader in your community? Do you want to contribute to your community?
And you're not just checking a box to say you were part of this club.
Right. They want you to work well in a team, to have your ideas. It's a multiple part process. The first interview is about 100 students in the room going through different exercises, and you have judges around the room looking for leadership skills and kind of rating people on how those qualities that would make a leader show up. Part of the mission is to create graduates who not only graduate in 4 years with not a lot of debt, but are also committed to improving their respective communities. So that's definitely a difference from the applications for college.
Where, yeah, they just want you, all right, you're good enough to come in here, give us your money.
Mm-hmm. Wow. They're giving you money. They're giving you money too.
So this is a program, and I think folks might be familiar with, like, programs like this. They have different names, but the general idea is similar. You know, you help folks transition from, you know, urban life or, like, the hood, and you're good at school, to, you know, being at a university, a private school. I mean, making sure you don't feel left out and you have those support networks, and most importantly, have that financial aid and, like, housing and I'm assuming you get like money for food too and all that stuff, right?
No. Well, I don't know, because you know I was undocumented.
So. Oh, that's right.
Well, in the first place, oh my god, they gave me money. They gave me full tuition for 4 years. At a private college, that's a ton of money.
Yeah.
Thank God Iowa had such a low standard of living, so I could stretch out my savings and, you know, do a couple of side hustles, and that went a lot further than it would go in the city. But they also give you a mentor. You also have meetings. You also have a writing coach if you need one. After you graduate, there's been improvements since I was in the Posse program. You now have a career advisor. You have someone who can look over your resume.
And I'm assuming these are things like y'all are like kind of like, hey, we should do this, we should do that as alumni.
I'm not sure it comes from alumni. I think it's more of LA was first a test trial. To see if it would work because it was a new city, and catching up to other offices, and just from research and from understanding like what students need, what young professionals need, the organization has grown and it's much more than the scholarship. You really get some good career support, especially in those crucial years of applying for your first or second job, or realizing you need to transition, because who knows why it took you to 24 to realize you don't really want to do what you're doing. You know, just saying.
Even at 34, I'm like having those thoughts. So what about like, well, so, you know, you were undocumented. You had this loophole that, you know, private institution can make up pretty much their own rules.
Private
like,
money.
Yeah. Of like who pays and what pays and how all of that works out. Obviously, it would have been a different story if it was a public school. But yeah, like talk about like what was it like with like the posse you were with there.
It was a lot of support. I'm not gonna say like all of us got along super well. Like any group, there's a little bit of conflict, different ideas. But man, those people were my rock. Like I think, you know, maybe in the entire time, I'm surprised it wasn't more, but in the entire time I was at Grinnell, I probably cried twice. And one of them was just because my history class was kicking my butt, and I just like, kind of felt overwhelmed. And, you know, I was questioning a little bit, like, you know, was it a mistake that they gave me the scholarship?
Oh.
So it was a lot. But it was really my posse. It was definitely Daisy, Jasmine, Ramiro, Lester, Adam, Tamara, who I could just go to and just release and feel strengthened, and you know, not having to worry what were they going to think. Could I tell them? I didn't tell a lot of people I was undocumented, because this is before the unafraid time. I was trying to blend in.
The darkened times.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to stand out.
You were literally in the shadows.
Yeah, so I didn't feel safe telling people. Right, this is Iowa. I saw so many.
Yeah, like, Iowa early 2000s.
Yeah, that, think about it. Very close to the Bible Belt. I didn't feel safe telling people. There was only one other person on campus that was undocumented. The school hadn't dealt with undocumented students. No. They didn't know how to classify us. Sometimes I got sent to the wrong meeting. Sometimes I got invited to things that really weren't for me because I was technically an international student.
Yeah.
So it was just, you know, different times. But Posse had my back. And, you know, even two of our posse members are married now. And
oh, wow.
They just had their second baby. As much as we can, we go to each other's weddings. We still support each other. You know, when they first got pregnant, like they called me on the phone to tell me. It's definitely a lifelong relationship with some of my posse.
Hell yeah. I've met some. I know I've met Daisy. I've met Alexis. I don't know if I met anybody else. But those are mostly folks that like are here in LA or is like something's going on.
Yeah. No, for sure. There's a couple of posse cities. And I was talking about Daisy Del Real. I think you've met Daisy Ventura.
No, you know what? I can't remember right
Anyways,
now.
Well, Daisy Ventura is coming. She just moved back. I'm actually going to head over to a brewery tonight to do her welcome back celebration.
Okay. Nice. Cool. So what did you end up studying when you were there?
Spanish. And don't tell me it's cheating, because then everyone who majors in English is cheating. Actually, I fell in love with Spanish literature when I took AP Spanish language at Roosevelt. Our teacher was amazing. She just made literature come to life. It just spoke to me so much more. I felt like in my English class, we were reading things like All the Pretty Horses and, like, I don't know, some pastoral type of prairie land American life type of thing that just didn't connect with me. And I went to Spanish class and it was like Rubén Darío and, you know, Simón Bolívar, and really contextualizing writing and poems. And there was so much more in terms of anti-capitalism and speaking up against racism in colonial Latin America that just really, I loved it. I was like, I want to be a Spanish literature teacher. I want to learn about Spanish literature, Spanish culture. It's Latin America. I think, you know, it was also that craving for not being able to visit. So I had to use books to feed that part of me.
Nice. And then you continued that after you graduated and you started going to Cal State LA.
Yeah. I was going to pursue a teaching credential. They told me, because I wasn't undocumented, that I wouldn't be able to get a credential because that's a state-issued license.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I didn't question that. So, reminder, always question things, even if they look like they're coming from authority. So I was like, oh, crap, what am I going to do? I don't have papers. I can't work. I mean, I could, but not with my degree.
Feeling those limitations.
So I was like, all right, let me get a master's, buy myself 2 years, come up with plan A, B, C, and D. Because when you're undocumented and you're poor and you're female, that's, you got to have all those extra plans lined up. So I pursued a master's in Latin American studies.
I remember because you were babysitting at the time, too.
Yeah, I was a nanny.
You were doing like whatever you could.
Yeah, I was a nanny. I did house sitting. One or a few times I did house cleaning. You know, it, whatever it takes, you got to do it. I tried to be a waitress. I suck. No, that didn't work out for me.
You couldn't remember people's orders?
I'm clumsy as hell. Have you seen me? I like walk into my bed. The bed doesn't move. It's like there every single day and I'll still wake up and walk into it.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. But okay, so you went from Grinnell to Cal State LA. When did you end up graduating?
2010.
So yeah, because I remember it took you a while. I mean, and like a lot of other folks, you're just kind of chipping at it little by little because, you know, you can't pay for the full tuition. And you have the balance between going to school part-time and then trying to work full-time.
Yeah, keeping a roof over your head, it's a
lot. All the everyday stuff. So what did you see yourself doing once you, like, you finished with school, like with obviously a BA and now a master's?
So I knew, thankfully, you know, right before, like, months, I would say maybe like March, I got my work permit in the mail. So that was huge. You know, I could let go of plan B, C, and D, which was to move back to Mexico, to maybe look into Canada. I was looking at maybe consulting before that, but then I was like, okay, I could get a regular job. But before that, I have to go visit my family. I haven't seen my family in so many years. I have to go meet them more than see them. So in 2010, which is forever going to be one of my favorite years ever, I took the time to go meet my family in Mexico and Oaxaca. And I was very, very fortunate to be able to also visit Mérida and Puebla and Querétaro. And I just, like, was in Mexico for 2.5 months. I cannot understate the support I've had of friends. I don't think I would have graduated in 2010 if it wasn't because my friend, no strings attached, just sent me money so I could pay for tuition. I hadn't worked enough or saved enough to actually pay for it. He was like, no questions needed. Here's the money. He didn't even live in California anymore. So that's one. When I came back from Mexico, you know, I didn't really have like money to pay for rent and food. I lived with my friend. He let me crash at his place. I'm always going to be so grateful. He's always been like such a huge, huge help. And that really gave me the space to apply for jobs, to think about what I wanted to do and not to go crazy, right?
Yeah.
Like not to have some serious health or mental health problems because I knew I had the love and support of my friends.
No, I totally agree with that. Like, if it isn't for folks opening up their space to a couch or to a floor, then, you know, you can end up homeless, like, super quick.
Yeah.
And that just completely derails everything.
Yeah.
So, all right. So by that time, because I remember when you were still in school, by that time we had already met, but we met through a mutual friend, and to this day, I think it's hilarious because it says that the two best things about us, because we met through a mutual friend and we met at a taco truck while we were riding our bikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just pretty much set the precedent for the
you
rest
like
of
bikes,
our friendship.
You like tacos? That's all I need to know.
You're cool. Because I remember, like, we met up that night. It was at Forest in Wabash. That truck is still there. But now I go to the Mediterranean place across the street. And, you know, we just went to, like, one of your friends' house. And we're just hanging out, drinking. And then, like, we all rode our bikes home. And then from there, like, we I don't remember, like, the specifics after that. But I just, it feels like from that day on, that's pretty much, like, every time we saw each other, that's what we were doing. And, like, we were hanging out, and every time we would hang out, we would get to know each other more and more and more. And, like, we just ended up, like, being friends after that.
Yeah, I mean, we went to numerous taco trucks, numerous bike rides. I mean, I even remember, once I knew I was, like, fuck, I'm poor right now, like, super poor, was remember when I would be like, hey, do you want to split a burrito?
Yeah.
Because I can't afford to buy a full burrito. It's going to be, like, my big meal of the day.
I had my own experience with that when I was younger, like right out of high school, and it's like I was just skating around with my friend, and like between the both of us it's like $5, so we're just like, all right, let's go to the like the Burger King, McDonald's, Taco Bell dollar menu, and like you make $5 work out for the both of you.
Yeah, and I just remember, like, we went from there to being like, let's organize some bike rides, let's
yeah
meet more people.
So part of that was, it wasn't like an overnight thing. So like as Laura and I started hanging out more with each other and with other folks, and then being in the similar spaces of like, oh, like we're both undocumented, we're both going to school, and we obviously each have our own specific experience to that, but it was relatable enough that, you know, we're like, yeah, we're in the same struggle. And we were part of like other like organizing efforts happening at mm-hmm. the time leading up to like the then 2010 vote of the Dream Act. So for us, by that point, we, you know, we've already been like hanging out as friends. It's like, hey, let's go do a group bike ride here, let's do a group bike ride there, or let's go do this, and let's go join Midnight Riders or something like that, right? And it was, I remember it was a lot of fun because you were still living in the PJs, and so we would go ride around, and then you would like invite us over to your house, and we just eat and like drink, just hang out.
Yeah.
Mm,
las conchitas from La Favorita.
Yeah. So for us, for what you were speaking to, when we started getting more intentional about like creating and organizing in those spaces, was basically that, like our experiences and our identities being undocumented, at this point, like a passion and a love for like riding our bikes and just having fun with them. And then, you know, having this other part of us where we're like organizing and advocating and like trying to fight for passage of whatever it is we were trying to fight for. So it was after the vote in 2010 that we were like, you know, we should do a bike ride. And this was something that somebody else mentioned somewhere in another space, but I remember we were at your house and we were just talking. I was like, why don't we do a bike ride from LA to like Orange County, because there was a group of folks here organizing for the Dream Act, and there was another group down there. So it's like, we're like, we both know each other.
Yeah.
You know, so let's just do it. And I remember that night we were just like started writing down notes. We were looking at maps on the computer, taking down miles, like where we could go and all this other stuff.
I remember a little differently.
That's how I remember.
But no, definitely that. I also remember we had signed up to do the Tour of the Dreams.
Oh, that's right.
And it was like you and Jose and maybe Jorge or someone else.
Tell folks know what the Tour of the Dreams was, because I don't think it's still around.
So, you know, like Tour de France type of thing, inspiration. But it was a bike ride from UC Berkeley to UCLA to raise awareness about supporting undocumented students. You know, at the time, you gotta remember the context of the time. At the time, we called ourselves Dreamers. And it was a little bit to fundraise for yourself. People could give you like 10 cents to a dollar to however much per mile. Yeah, you know,
like the way like the AIDS life cycle ride works.
Yeah. So we had been like, yeah, we're going to ride these 540 miles. And then one by one, people were like, nah, Laura, I can't go. Da-da-da, this and that. I crashed my bicycle because we had been on night watch when there was a protest.
At Feinstein's office. Yeah.
And then we were riding back all sleep deprived. I got hit by a car. My bicycle died. But somehow I was like, no, maybe I should still do this ride. And when I came back, I thought it was such a beautiful, empowering experience, but I also recognize that it's really hard to get people who should be on these rides to take 9+ days off to travel, to do the ride. So then we were like, well, why don't we start doing a ride here? And I think in that same week, someone from OCD Dream Team had typed a comment on one of our Facebook photos because we were like, yeah, bike rides, and they were like, oh, come visit us, kind of just like messing around. And then we were like, wait a minute, we should, why not?
Yeah. But so OCDT was the back then known as the Orange County Dream Team, and I think now it's Orange County Immigrant Youth something, but folks changed their names. I can't remember exactly, sorry about that. But yeah, that's a great memory because we all ranked out. I mean, like any other ride, you know, you have to like, you know, give like a deposit of money. So that pretty much kind of ensures that you're committed because you're not going to lose out on that much money.
That's where I met your current roommate.
Yeah, Pablo. Yeah. So, you know, I ended up going with Pablo and like a couple of other folks during the last stretch of the ride, so just to like help out, because y'all were like close enough that we can, somebody with the car could drive over there. Mm-hmm. But the idea, yeah, that was the idea. Like we took that ride concept of like ride for purpose, you know, for movement, for struggle, and basically politicizing our bike ride from LA to Orange County. And because the Dream Act didn't pass in 2010, we're like, why don't we do something like fun and energetic to get folks like on the right path back, you know, to like, you know, kind of like dusting ourselves off after the fight and, you know, putting like good intentions. And when we started planning, what, maybe December, January?
It was cold. Yeah.
Yeah. So we started planning early because I know the ride happened, what, like February or March?
I'm drawing a blank.
Well, it was like a quick 2-3 months turnaround, but kind of like what Laura was speaking to before, too. We took the lead in terms of like planning the ride, letting everybody know this is what we wanted to do, the intention, the purpose, logistics, a lot of this other stuff, and us delegating the work of like, all right, can you and like this crew of folks, you know, ensure that we can have enough food for folks and like pick up the food and make it and all this other stuff? Can y'all make sure we have this? Can y'all make sure we have enough of that? Support, like a vehicle support in case anybody gets hurt or their bike isn't, you know, be able to fix on the moment. So, and then like we did bike safety training workshops leading up to it too, just to make sure folks feel comfortable about like being part of this ride and that they know that we're going to be riding out on the streets.
Yeah.
So do you remember anything else about like all that craziness?
Yeah, I remember thinking like our normal rides were usually 10 people starting from Boyle Heights, moving somewhere. We were like, cool, our goal is to get 25 people. And then we're like, oh crap, we're at 80 people registered. We need some help. What the hell did we do? But we're still really excited and this is gonna happen.
Yeah.
We actually, that's when I met Andy Rodriguez and Allison, who were formerly with LACBC, Los Angeles County Bike Coalition, and they were really a lot more knowledgeable than me, I think even you, on how to set up safety workshops, how to get some equipment, like basic things like lights.
No, so what ended up happening is because of my memory, like I have it as the point I met both of them was when we were at one of La Chamba House parties, and that's where we met them, because like we were talking or something and we overheard them or they overheard us.
Yeah.
And then that one thing led to another and we're like, oh, we work and, you know, we're like, we have this organization, City of Lights. We help out jornaleros. Like, we give them bike lights, safety classes. Like, what? We're undocumented. Like, you know, we're going to be planning this bike ride. Like, we should get together. And that's how we ended up doing both the workshops. And then also, because they were so just, like, penny-pinching back then, too, and just, like, getting off the ground, they even, like, donated some money to help pay for, like, some of the cost of the ride as well, too, mm-hmm. in, like, the first 2-3 years. And even themselves being there as instructors to, like, to help lead the classes and then participating in the rides themselves. So, yeah, if it wasn't for us meeting Andy and Allison, wherever we met them at, I think we wouldn't have been as successful with the ride as we were.
Yeah. You know what? And that's, like, a reminder of how many community spaces, open mics, bars sometimes yeah. just were such a great, we used it as an organizing tool. I remember that was my excuse
before social media
to be like, I gotta go to yeah. the like M Bar, I gotta go to Inside Love. I was like, I gotta go make this announcement, I gotta go recruit people for this bike ride,
let people know.
But I met so many amazing people. Before that, you know, it was all about work and school, so I had very few friends, and through organizing I really made some amazing friendships.
Yeah, no, same here. So for us, yeah, one thing led to another. We did the bike ride the first year, LA to Orange County, the second year Orange County to LA, and then 1 year we did it to the Valley, and then after that we stopped doing it because we just, like, things shifted and it wasn't the same, like, in terms of, like, the political landscape and what we were doing as individuals at the times too, which I don't remember, but point being, we could just couldn't do it anymore. So that didn't stop us from continuing being involved in bicycle advocacy for mm-hmm. for both of us. We kept up with Allison and Andy, so, you know, we ended up connecting with their work and what they were doing, but then we also ended up finding and connecting with the folks at BC Digna, which was a bike co-op, pretty much like operated and run by, like, jornaleros who were part of a day labor mm-hmm. center out of Idepska. So I remember going, it was over on Washington and Main. Like, the building's still there, but obviously they're not. But every time I drive down Main, it's like, oh yeah, that's your BC Digna space. And, you know, they eventually did transition from that space and as an organization to what is now BC Libre, which is on 6 in Bixel over in Pico Union. Yeah.
I'm just like, history is changing names, changing locations. But I think it's just for me a reminder that there's so much activity, that people are very active in making a positive change. And also that things have a history, man. Like, there's been some work put in to get things to where they are now.
Yeah.
Y todo lo que nos falta. It's like, There's plenty of work to be done.
I mean, I'm not in a hurry. At this point, now that I'm older, I'm just trying to, like we were talking about before we started recording, just balance of, like, I got to get this done, but I also want to do this. And you know, talking about you wanted to travel before the year is done, but then also, you know, balancing your responsibilities at work too, because you can't just take off like I do. I'm like, I put in my two weeks ahead of time to take vacation, I'm gone, bye. That's it.
Wow, 2 weeks? That's, wow.
No, usually I do it earlier than that, but yeah. Just so they know, I'm not going to be here these days. But are there any memories that stick out for you from those early years when we were just like, we used to also do a ride from Mariachi Plaza all the way to Venice Beach and back mm-hmm. in the summer, in the nighttime, like the DreamHack ride?
I think we're just getting to know the jornaleros was a really great experience. Volunteering at the kitchen, I mean, I wasn't really volunteering because I didn't really know anything about bikes except how to ride one. But they really just taught me. I still kind of suck. I'm not a good bike mechanic, but I know if you're lying to me, if something's wrong with my bike.
It's kind of like when you go get your car fixed.
Yeah, no, but I really enjoyed listening and getting to know the men. I remember, like, so many things that are fear driven. Some people were like, oh, why are you going to volunteer there? Like, you're a young girl. Like, make sure you're.
People were saying that?
Yeah, like, don't wear short shorts. You know, like, they might try to hit on you. And I was just like, what the hell is everyone talking about? Like, I just want to go fix my bike.
Dang. I remember you were fixing your bike.
And I was just like, dude, I dress like the same way all the time. Like I'm eternally in my pajamas. I'm actually eternally in my pajamas right now. So it was all these fears that remind me of like the media and how scary they make out to be other people. And the men were great. And I feel like they saw me more like their daughter, and they shared about their families and they shared about their story. And they helped me put together a brand new bike because, as I mentioned earlier, I had got hit by a car and my bike died, and I made a bike from recycled pieces that were at the shop. I got like a frame from one bike, wheels from another bike. Like, it was called Frankie.
You named it Frankie.
Yeah, it was a little odd. Someone helped me sand it. Someone helped me paint it.
I was there for some of that, yeah.
So it was just so good to, one, for my nerdy environmental heart, to, like, save these pieces from going to the trash. Two, to see the support and to kind of learn from other people who are older than me and, mm-hmm. you know, who remind me of my family. We're volunteering there and meeting Brenda, who's a great friend.
Yeah,
now.
That's where we met Brenda. Awesome.
Yeah.
Brenda and other folks. I don't think a lot of them are still around, but yeah, I really appreciate that space because we were just there like bagos. We were just hanging out.
And as a female, I was like, oh my God, a girl that rides a bike. Like, I have to talk to her. There's never any girls around.
Sausage face with us.
So that was really awesome for me.
Oh, man. So we can talk, because you were talking about, you know, all the connections and friendships you've made and like some of the advocacy you've worked on in the past, informally and formally. One of the things I think most folks know you now for is like this passion for advocacy, obviously, but this passion for nature and like hiking and the outdoors and like, you know, being one with the environment around us and not just being like so closed off. So for you, what was it? Was it something from like since childhood, or was it like a point where like you kind of realized this is what I love and I should be doing?
No, it's definitely something from childhood. I don't think I fully comprehended that I loved it until I didn't have regular access to it. And I also don't think I ever considered it being a job or like an option. Like, I thought that's what I do on the weekend. That's what keeps me sane. I had no idea of the concept of green careers. You know, had I known about green careers, had I known about pursuing this path earlier on, maybe I would have majored in something completely different.
Yeah.
Who knows? I'm happy of my path, but it definitely was different. I know earlier you were asking me like, hey, was Iowa the first time you left the hood? And I was like, no, for the mountains. Like, yeah, going right. to the San Gabriels was the first time I left the hood, which, you know, pretty close.
Yeah, they're not too far off. And I think that it's part of like some of what you do, you know, as a friend, you're like, and being on social media, obviously encouraging others. It's like, hey, this, you know, hiking trail or this landmark or this open space isn't so far off or like so distant to us that, you know, you shouldn't take advantage of. So for you, what was it like during like when those early days, like when you went to the SGV Mountains as a youth, or like in Iowa where there was like more greenery than there is like living in an urban city? What was it for you that kept like you said, that was your like where you recharge your batteries?
My happy place.
Yeah.
It was Georgia. When I was in kindergarten, my mom and I moved to Georgia, and we lived in the rural community. I had a pet dog. I had a pet goose. There was a man-made lake that a couple of neighbors shared. You know, we grew a bunch of fruit. It was a completely different environment, and I'm such a believer that nature is healing, and I think having had that experience at an early age is what made me so resilient and helped me to come back and push through. And when we left Georgia, I remember I cried so much because there were no trees and everything was so noisy and I couldn't go anywhere. Like, there, my mom would be like, yeah, go knock on the neighbor's door that was like leaving the driveway and walking down the street and it was fine. And here it was like, don't even leave the apartment building or don't even leave the apartment.
Don't look out the window.
Yeah, such a huge difference. Earlier I was laughing because I was like, oh, you know, let me think about these wrestling fights. And a part of me was like, of course, in the park.
In the park.
Like somehow it goes back to parks. When I was in cross country, our coach, I'm so glad he was our coach. He was young and he was also from the community. So he brought a different lens to the work he did, Robert Mata, and he took us to the San Gabriels to practice. But really, I think he knew that we all needed a break from the city. And, you know, it was the only way that I think he could help us expand our mind in terms of where we could go and what we could see. And what we could reach. And of course, it was an awesome bonding time. Like, that's where I really got to know my team members.
Yeah, you were in a long bus ride.
I'm like, what was the question? Sorry, I totally just started ranting. I'm like, I have no idea what I was talking about.
I would have slapped answering. You if it wasn't, like, related to the question.
Oh, these tangents.
But no, I mean, that's how passionate and that's how, like, how deep of a love you have for, like, the outdoors and for nature and to being connected to that. So for you, I remember, you know, you were in a shift for a good period of time, like in this transition period where, you know, you were working just like as an organizer with like one of the local community orgs. But, you know, in like our check-in conversations, you're always like, you know, this is just one stepping stone toward getting to almost to where you are now, literally, like where you're working at a it's a nonprofit, right?
It's a nonprofit.
Yeah, an advocacy organization, a nonprofit that's specifically dealing with national parks and wildlife. So for you, what I mean, outside of like, you know, on the weekends and the opportunities you got to go camp and connect with nature, what are other some of like forms that kept you going between, especially during those like transition periods of like, I just got to deal with this for like X amount of time till I can move on to the next one.
I took a permaculture class because the nerd in me was like, I need a class.
Well, what is permaculture?
Permaculture is kind of looking at different systems and looking at nature to really teach us how to do the most with the least amount of impact. A lot of people, when they hear permaculture, it's connected to the way you would build eco-friendly house or alternative ways of farming that are not so harmful to our soil and are a lot more biodiverse. So I took that for fun. I paid my own money, gave up a bunch of time to do that. That was great though, because that really allowed me to move from organizing around education reform to start working at community gardens, which was really what gave me the opportunity to now work for the National Parks Conservation Association. And I'm so glad it happened that way because it gives me a completely different lens, and organizing is so important. Mm-hmm. The reason why organizing became tough to me is because I was organizing around education issues, and LAUSD has so many issues that still I felt does. Like it still does. Yeah, people ask me, is it better now? I'm like, I don't know. We're less crowded.
There's no sodas in school.
Yeah, but it was just really hard. To deal with that. And I feel like I grew up hearing that college was the pathway to success, and not only the pathway but the only pathway. And I don't think that's true. As much as I love school, as much as I'm a nerd, I don't think a college degree is the only way to be successful. So I felt like it was unethical of me to like preach this when I didn't believe it. I felt like I was lying. So it was very problematic. But nature, on the other hand, is something that I 100% believe in, regardless of whether you're doing it for recreation, mental well-being, bragging rights, climbing peaks, whatever. I believe nature is good for everyone. And even when it's difficult, even when we have not only a president, but a whole set of administrations that are horrible for the environment, I still believe in nature and its resiliency. So even in the hardest of times, I don't feel like I'm not being replenished some way.
Okay. Yeah, that's your go-to place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about is because you are you know, so involved, obviously, in advocacy work and in personal life with being out in nature and camping and hiking. And we can talk about one of the hikes you just recently did. But one of the things I really wanted to, like, kind of, like, focus on and talk about was the misconceptions we have, you know, in our communities. And, you know, speaking from my communities, being Latino of Mexican descent, that I like the outdoors and being in nature and hiking and that kind of stuff isn't things that we're like, yeah, we should all be doing that. It's kind of like, well, for me, like, for the longest, it was like, well, I don't know how to do that. Like, why am I going to be out there? And, like, what's the point of being out there when, like, it's cold and there's mosquitoes, you know, basically all the stereotypes that kind of play into that, you know, people of color aren't outdoors because of so many different reasons. And wow, that lawnmower got louder.
Sorry, guys. Neighbor got a people.
You just have to speak up a little more. But yeah, those misconceptions that, you know, people of color and people from marginalized communities don't want to be outdoors or don't belong outdoors, but and the barriers that come along with that, like, what have you has been your experience?
That's changing. That's changing both from within our community and also, like, the mainstream community. It's gonna change. I have no doubt about that. But I think this reminds me of when I decided to join Latino Outdoors as a volunteer. Why it appealed to me to join Latino Outdoors versus, like, the Sierra Club or any other organization.
Like a mainstream white organization.
Yeah, or even the one that I work for. Was because I felt like it was an organization who clearly wanted self-representation and not just Latino portrayal, but Latino leadership and speaking for ourselves. In the past, I had an experience where someone wrote an article about me for getting the POSSE scholarship. And the lens they brought to it was like, wow, look at this scholarship, saving her life. Poor little girl otherwise would have never gone to college. And that really, like, pissed me off. So I was like, no, I need to be more active in using my own voice and sharing my own story, not allowing somebody else to take my story and portray it through whatever lens they have. So Latino Outdoors definitely is about connecting more young people, more families. A lot of us who at the time, you know, before I did feel like, oh, my friends who like bike rides are not interested in hikes. Like, they'll go bike with me to the beach. They'll bike with me a third of our state. But the moment I'm like, let's go camping, they're like, nah, what? Dude, there's mosquitoes or something. And there are. But, you know, I met other Latinos from all over the country, different ages, and I was like, this is one of my tribes, for sure. I recently officially stopped volunteering with them because I want to dedicate my full time to my work at NPCA. It is a mainstream organization, mm-hmm. but I'm also committed. Not just me. There's definitely a strong amount of people who are committed to putting in time, putting in work so that our organization becomes more inclusive and more diverse and more equitable. It's a 100-year-old organization. Well, almost. It's turning 100 next year. So immediately think about who founded this organization, what privilege they had, you know, the fact that it survived for so many years. And I work there as an outreach manager for the Los Angeles office. I have a super incredible, supportive regional team. Our regional director has been very supportive of me doing things in ways that are new. You know, like I've organized a bike ride for them. I've done camping trips. I've done kayaking trips in the LA River. Not just let's go to DC, not just let's write to your senator, but let's connect. Although the more I work for NPCA, the more I'm like, ah, damn it. It is important to talk to your congressperson. It is important to go to their field offices. You have to do both, you know?
Yeah. Like
I try to keep it fun. I try to keep it fun, and I try to make sure that I'm reminding the organization as much as the people that I work with that these skills of advocacy are about parks and so much more. Like, obviously we're a park organization. We don't need to say we're a park organization every 5 minutes.
No.
But we do need to help people tell their own stories. And, you know, by helping them understand how to meet with their representatives, hopefully they also see that they can do that on other issues. It's more than just parks, for sure.
So what would you, how would you describe the work that y'all are doing? Like, what was, like, give me the spiel.
So our mission is to protect and enhance national parks for current and future generations. We do a range of work. We have offices that do more traditional conservation wildlife work. Mm-hmm. We have local campaigns that go from clean air and clean water to energy issues.
So making sure y'all are getting funded.
No, that's not, I haven't even got to the funding part. I'm talking about like working with regulations and like working against oil interests,
but also including community.
Because that's how they get their jobs. It's messy. It's complicated to trying to work to expand existing national parks, to working to get new national parks. In the LA office, we do a lot of community engagement. And like I said, I really try to combine recreational and advocacy components. When you, you know, just get to know us little by little. But also we are working with Congressman Schiff to double the size of the Santa Monica Mountains National Recreation Area. We need to bring the national park system closer to where most people live. And I really think that national parks for a long time have been perceived as a luxury. And if we're doing nothing to get that park closer to the city, then we're not really doing anything to change that dynamic. So we're working to get sites like La Placita Olvera, LA State Historic Park, Debs Park, Verdugo Hills to have a higher level of protection. It's a very slow-paced work, but I do think that it's crucial. Like, I don't see how we would get the same benefits if we don't have added protections and if we don't engage with urban communities. And then another very long-term project that we have is getting more people to become aware of cultural sites. So I've done a couple of trips up to the Cesar Chavez Monument. There is a study and a proposal to expand that from being a monument to being a historical park that would include other sites. To tell a wider story of the farm labor movement and to talk about other leaders, you know, the Filipino community did a lot of work before Mexicans joined the struggle. So a lot of stories need to be told. I was just in Alabama. We were really learning about like the civil rights movement. So national parks are about story and history, and there's so much that needs to be done to tell a history that's not so whitewashed and so incomplete. So those are kind of the things that maybe people don't know about or wouldn't think about when it comes to the type of work we're doing.
Okay. And after listening to this, I'm so moved that I want to do something about it. How can I get involved?
You could do a couple of things. You can write to your senator, which are the, you know,
This point, it's like a laundry list of like, dear senator, you need to stop fucking up on all these things.
Yeah, but I think one thing that I didn't really promote before and I'm promoting more now is become a member.
Okay.
Because
of the organization.
Because first I was like, why? Like, you get this magazine? I'll give you these magazines for free, right? Like, I was like, why? It's not even that much money. It's like $25, $35
a year. Yeah, it's not an expensive
membership. I mean, I'm a member. I actually give MPCA a few dollars every month just automatically. That's how much I believe in the work. But I think what really started getting me to think about why I need to tell people to become members is that the organization has been around for 100 years, and not just MPCA, but other organizations, mm-hmm. right? And if they want to take a different stance and they want to make change, it's a whole process from getting staff to buy in, to getting board members to buy in, to getting your members to buy in. So if members are more vocal about like being more progressive or, you know, being tougher or really pushing our stance a little bit more, yeah, then it helps everyone if members are being vocal about these things. And how can members be vocal about the work we're doing if we're not changing what our membership is? It's not a lot of money. I would also just tell people, find an organization that you can connect with. You don't have to engage in all the issues. There's so many issues to engage with, but stay committed, stay informed, you know, go from recreation to sharing with others why, yeah, these places are important. And I know, like you mentioned, that you've never been camping.
Not on purpose.
Yeah, that was such an interesting response. I think I never thought of asking you. And we were on a hike, and Danny's my husband. He was like, "Oh, Eric, do you like camping?" And Eric was like, "In theory, I do." And I was like, "What? What does that mean?" And then he was like, "I think I would, but I've never gone." So I still have it on my list to go for us to go camping, but just connecting.
Yeah, no. Well, part of jumping a little bit from the advocacy conversation is that, yeah, for me, like if I'm talking about it, it's like, well, I don't have, like, let's role play. Like you're Laura and I'm Eric.
Wow, very imaginative.
Yeah. You know, you're inviting me to, "Hey, Eric, let's go camping." It's like, well, Laura, you know, all right, I'm making up excuses about work. All right, that didn't work. I'm making up other excuses about, like, helping a friend move. That didn't work. All right, I don't have a tent. I don't have a sleeping bag. I don't have this. Like, where do you poop? I don't, like, know anything about this. Why would I want to go?
Yeah. man, like, people are very into the pooping question. But
it's a very important question.
I would take you car camping or, you know, camping right in the site where you drive up to the place and you pop your tent open next to it. I wouldn't take you backpacking for the first time.
Here's a 50-pound bag and we gotta climb.
Those are different experiences.
There's glamping. One of my coworkers is glamping.
Yeah, there's so many ways. You don't have to do it one way. I don't think one way is right over the other. I enjoy everything from glamping to let's just go backpacking. But yeah, things are expensive. Little by little, I think borrow things, buy things used on eBay, try to go to the garage, REI garage sale, see if people can let you borrow things. But there are also ideas on how to find alternatives. I know Danny and I have a system where we save money and every year we buy one new item. So 1 year,
that this is going into like your repertoire and inventory of like campy stuff.
And 1 year it's going to be like, let's improve something that we have so that it's lighter for when we do go backpacking. And the next year it's like, let's, you know, upgrade an item or add an item for when we go camping right next to our car. And that way it helps. So, but we also have extra stuff.
Yeah.
Danny's a camper too. So unfortunately, we all had the same stuff. So we were like, yeah, we're going to, like, you know, grow our camping equipment. And then we all had the exact same thing. Still missing the exact same things. But ask around. Ask friends. See if there's a program. See if whether it's an organization or someone who you have seen on Instagram or somewhere that is camping or hiking, how they got that.
Yeah, we have mutual friends that do. You ride your bike and then you camp. And
yeah.
You ride your bike back home. Yeah.
So, but also don't feel like you have to buy all the brand name stuff right away. It's overpriced a lot of the times. Mm. You know, just figure out what you really need and invest little by little. Don't get a catalog and figure out what you need based on
what you see in the catalog. No, I mean, it's kind of like getting into anything. You start off slowly.
Yeah.
You end up buying used things. You're like, all right, this is what I need. This is what I don't need.
Costco has some great sales on some things.
Like tents?
Like walking sticks, like backpacks, like those convertible pants.
Convertible pants?
Yeah, like the pants that have the zipper. And it's like,
at the knee?
Yeah. Like, they're pants. Now they're shorts.
Nobody should be wearing.
Those are such.
Well, okay, but maybe because my experience has been, I see those and like, it's somebody's wearing them as like, you're out here wearing that. as opposed to the intended purpose of nature, where it's like, oh, it's hot, let me take off my pants at the bottom. Oh, it's cold, let me zip up my pants.
You're right. I mean, you don't have to wear them at all either. I don't.
I used to have a pair of pants like that when they were in fashion with like Junko jeans and all this good stuff. Yeah, the point being, you know, connect with friends who are already doing it, you know, have them show you and guide you. And yeah, like anytime I have questions about this kind of stuff, Loud is one of my go-to folks. It's like, hey, like, I have a question about this, like, da 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 da, what do you think about it? Like, what would you do? So definitely, if you don't have a friend like that, Laura can be your friend like that.
You can find me on Instagram.
Yeah. So I also talked about this earlier, and like, we can touch on it now. It was earlier this year, right, when y'all went on the trail?
Which trail?
The one where y'all, this is the one y'all been preparing for months.
Oh, we did the climate hike.
Yes. Yeah. So tell folks about that.
All right. The climate hike. There is this organization called Climate Ride, and they started off by doing bicycle rides, much like we've spent a bunch of time talking about already. But here the purpose is to raise money so that organizations can do climate change work. And there's a whole bunch of organizations who benefit from this. You pick the organizations who will benefit from your fundraising efforts. And a few years, they added on a climate hike. Danny was like, I'm not interested in the bike. That's too long of a bike ride for him. But we decided to do this as a couple. Instead of doing a wedding registry, we asked people to donate money for this ride so that we could participate. So I guess it was kind of like our honeymoon part two. And we did some fundraisers at home too. Yeah. I sold some plants because I love plants. But the idea is to raise awareness of how real climate change is. I think I was also trying to use it as an opportunity to talk about how climate change affects the entire planet. Unfortunately, like most things, it affects poor people the most. Poor people are at the front lines of the impact.
Frontline communities.
Yeah, the damage of this. And also, I was looking at the pictures, and it's like the environmental movement that is mainstream, still very white. So I wanted to make sure that, like volunteering for LO for representation and self-representation, like working for NPCA to try to bring more of a bridge to my community, I also wanted to start being a brown face in this space, talking about climate change, raising money for it, learning about it. Not only do you get a beautiful experience at this park, but you have guides who know about geology, who know about the history. You have speakers come in and tell you about science and tell you about the work that's being done. And I learned so much in terms of fundraising, which is weird why it stuck to my head, because I think it's like one of those topics I'm not very interested in. But this stuck in my head.
Y'all were like fundraising to the last minute. Yeah. That's probably why it like stuck in your head a lot longer.
Maybe it was that they talked about how not like foundation money, but like individual donations. Like people will donate to a lot of health reasons. So a lot of like
cancer runs
or like asthma, AIDS. Yeah, a lot of those things. But individuals don't really donate to climate change. Like a very small percentage of money that is donated by individuals goes to climate change. And I think it's crazy because that's what affects everyone.
But Laura, I recycle at home. I'm doing my part.
And you know, that's also frustrating, right? It's companies and corporations who are really messing up our environment.
Yes.
And of course, I definitely recycle, and I'm trying to be low waste.
You're like one of the few folks I know you like compost too.
Well, not anymore, but I was.
You was.
Because I don't have a, I don't have any space to take no, my compost to. I have a lot of potted plants, but I don't carpet give them. Too. Yeah, but you know, it's also about companies and industry. But I think the conversation has to start somewhere, and I hate feeling like a victim. I hate feeling like I can't do anything. Mm. You know, like that just drives me nuts.
Being powerless, yeah.
Yeah, there we go. That's what I meant. So I really feel like I had a responsibility to try to tell everyone about this hike and about climate change.
And what it's about and your intentions behind it.
Yeah. And to like have this experience be something that I shared with my husband. And we did learn a lot about each other. Turns out he hates fundraising more than I hate fundraising. So I was like, oh, this is interesting. This is our first little thing we're going to have to work through.
Yeah, I remember talking about that or why he might have felt that way. But I think, yeah, if you, he doesn't work at a nonprofit or like does advocacy work. So for him, it's a completely different experience than like how we're used to doing it.
Yeah. But it was great that he was very supportive. And that he agreed to do it. And it did force us to have these weekly hikes. You know, we were doing weekly hikes to Echo Mountain. We were doing hikes at Ascot Hills. We were once in a while doing hikes at Debs Park. And it also gave me an opportunity to, like, reconnect with you, to kind of hang out with Rafa for a bit, to reconnect with Brenda. So it's given me so much. But still, climate change is so important. I don't want to be like, oh, my God, doomsday type of thing. One thing that I did learn that was interesting and I understand why is one of the scientists talked about how in China, as they were getting ready for the Olympics, they basically put a pause on industry. And they told everyone to take a vacation and to leave the city messed up, right? Like, we don't want our visitors seeing you. Go visit your family in the countryside.
I think I remember hearing about this.
Getting a vacation.
It's like Kintsugi coronas.
Yeah, messed up. But the reason why I was like, holy crap, I didn't even I would have never even thought about this, but it was so interesting to hear, was that they could visibly measure how much cleaner the environment was, the quality of the air. Which in the topic that is so overwhelming, it gives me hope that there is time to stop things. There is time to adapt. There are things we can do as individuals, but again, clearly industry has to change. But yeah, I think that's one of the most threatening things we have. Is this crazy weather. Like, it's it affects our wallets, it affects our health, it affects our comfort, everything. Like, if I can't sleep, you know, there's no AC in this apartment, I become grumpier, I spend more money on
right.
It's like my mental health care. It's
everything's connected.
And those are all very, like, selfish kind of impacts, you know?
But they're immediate. That's what you're living.
I feel like I still struggle on how to make the immediate consequences of what our planet is going through easy and digestible for people to see.
Yeah, because I remember last time I asked you, I was like, hey, Laura, I don't drink regular milk because, you know, it's bad for you in so many different ways. But then I was like, hey, which milk do you recommend that has, like, the least environmental impact? Should I drink almond milk? Cashew milk, soy milk, like, and then I remember you got back to me. It's like, oh yeah, there's no good answer for that one.
Yeah, I was like, I just stopped drinking milk.
So I mean, that for me, I think that these last couple of years is very much realizing right this intricate network of how the movement of goods impacts everything from the visual of like pollution and freight trucks driving through our communities and our neighborhoods to like the everyday things that we don't think twice about. I have Amazon Prime. I do that 2-fucking-day delivery. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't do that. Because lately I've been reading more and more articles about, you know, your carbon footprint, you know, before and after like doing Amazon Prime and like 2 days and all this other shit and all this other stuff. And like really thinking about, like, well, number one, I should stop being an Amazon Prime member because it's expensive, but and also being more resourceful about where I'm getting like the things that I'm trying to get out somewhere else. So very much going back to that like, local perspective of like buying local and like spending my money locally instead of like in some giant conglomerate.
Yeah, it's everything's like so many layers. Recently, I've started to really take more time to do thrift shopping, especially for work clothes. I mean, I should probably lose some weight. I will eventually. But this is a reason why I need to buy more clothes. So instead of going to buy new work clothes, I've been going to two different thrift stores. And I know not everyone has a local thrift store. And I've also purchased some things off of ThredUp. It's a website where you can buy used clothing. I finally came to terms with some of my older professional clothes. It's just never going to fit. That's okay. So I gave some of my clothes to Danny's niece for when she has interviews.
Oh.
Now she's in college. So pretty soon she'll get to that interview thing. So I gave her the very basic stuff, like white top, black slacks type of thing. Danny was making fun of me because he's like, those things are out of style. Don't give them to my niece. But I was like, actually, these are work things. I'm very basic and like the gray, white.
Simple colors. Yeah, you know, you're not offending anybody.
Not even that. Just so that I don't have to buy a new one because it's a new season and the new patterns in, or, you know, just
mix and match.
Trying to stretch that money. So I also sold some of my stuff to ThredUp. And with that money I made, I was able to buy new clothes that will fit. But in general, I'm trying to consume less. I'm trying to make sure I'm being conscious about where I purchase, how I purchase. But it's one step at a time, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not that easy. Convenience has a way of pulling you back in.
It does. That's why I started driving.
Yeah, right. Oh my god, we didn't own cars for the longest.
It's like, I got money now, buy a bicycle.
I basically bought a car because they were like, you either need to buy a car within x amount of time
for your
you
job.
Need to find a new job.
Yeah, it's mostly because of our pressures from work. But for me, not necessarily that I needed a car to like had drive at work, it's just the commute. But for you, it was literally like, yeah, you're gonna need a car because you're going from here. And you got to take all this stuff with you.
And they still commute when they can.
Yeah.
I'll take the gold line. I'll take the blue bus.
Yeah, so when you can, you do it. Other than that, you know, just turn on the tune skis in your car. But we're pretty much at the end of the show now. Is there anything else that you wanted to let folks know about that you might have coming up with your job, with you personally? Where can folks connect with you?
Sure. I am on Instagram as SweetgrassBH, and we have different events. We pretty much have one event a month where I'm always looking for volunteers or for people to participate, whether it's a recreation activity, whether it's a stewardship activity, whether it's an advocacy activity. And in December, we are having a small reception to thank our volunteers for all the time and all their passion that they provide our work with, for people to meet each other. And recently, I started this group for work called the Los Angeles Young Leaders Council. So I'm working on getting their bios and make that like official.
Okay.
But I could share because it's official. I just need to like make it into a way that it is shareable easily. And I'm really excited about this group. They've already, meeting number one, had so many great ideas about how to reach a wider audience, how to make our work more creative. So I also think that when we have our volunteer appreciation dinner, we'll introduce them. And it's a great way to meet other people. Maybe people that are closer to you, you know, people within a few blocks of where you live that otherwise you would have not known were there. I don't have a date yet, and I'm working on the location, but if they follow our NPCA Facebook page, they should get a reminder. We do like those targeted ads, or if they follow my Instagram, every now and then I mix some work stuff, and I'm pretty sure I'll post it there.
Yeah, and your jobs account on Facebook post. The last thing I was watching was a video about bears. So it's like, oh, this is cool. It's like Natural Geographic.
Oh, we do. We have a partnership with them. And right now they're working on reintroducing some wolves to somewhere in Michigan. I should know this. Oh, my goodness. The name is slipping my brain.
Like timber wolves, gray wolves. Well, somewhere out in the Midwest.
It's not my department.
But so there you have it. Thank you, Laura, for making time, you know, for sharing, for hanging out, for being a dope ass best friend, and an amazing all around person. So, you know, there you have it. If folks want to connect with you, SweetGrassBH on Instagram, and, you know, just keep it lively. Go hang out in nature if you can. What's the rule when you go out? Like, leave it as...
Leave it better than you found it.
Yeah, so that means picking up some trash if you see it along the way. So that's it. Another episode of Orale Bo Heights. Thanks again, Laura. And I'll catch y'all next time.
Thank you, Eric.